Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 95, I thought it was 96, but come to find out it's 95, is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, we are broadcasting once again from dreary, rainy, cold, yet still beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. Do you think we're going to have any snow or ice storms like we, at least every other year, seem to have? Because so, we're almost into February.
I was going to say, last year in February, I was looking through some photos of mine. Last year in February, we actually had some snow.
February tends to be the worst month for us, and even can move into early March. And so,
well, it's I still remember the blizzard of 1993.
The Snowmageddon?
No, that was...
What was that? When was that?
That was...
Was it 93, obviously?
Definitely not 93. That was in, like, maybe 2010-ish.
So what was the snow of 93 in Georgia?
I don't know. I remember I was, like, in third grade, and it was a blizzard, and everything closed like they always do, but...
My brother Alan in West Texas, yesterday we were talking, he said the wind was blowing very, very hard, 45 to 60 miles an hour, and he said he was trying to pull out onto what we would call... two-lane or four-lane highway, which around here, you know, we have 6 to 8 lanes going one way.
Yes.
But he said he was in the little
Frogger is not a good game to play in Atlanta.
Around Meadow, and the sand was blowing so hard, he could not see, you know, 5-10 feet on either side of him trying to pull out on the highway. And so we kind of reminisced about the old sandstorms that I used to go through and the tumbleweeds blowing across the highways. Yeah. And it's just a different world up there.
Real quick, talking about Snowmageddon. So some people call it Snowmageddon. Some call it Snowpocalypse. Some call it Snow Jam.
So let me guess the date. We are in 2021. It was probably 2015.
It was January 28th. 2014.
14, okay.
Yeah. So almost like, what is today? Today's the 31st. It's a Sunday. So, yeah.
So a couple of weeks. So I was wrong. We don't always get bad weather in February only, but...
But that really wasn't like tons and tons of snow. And I think that's why like we got hammered so much as, you know, Southeast Georgia people or whatever. Just we weren't prepared for it. So like that ice is really what kind of got people.
Yeah.
And the roads were not... We're not ready for that. So crazy, 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 still crazy. Like I'm actually currently looking at images like on Google Images just to see the masses of cars
along the interstate
stuck on the roads.
And that was mainly I-75, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was 75. I think it was like the 75 to 85 area.
Yeah. So going up towards Marietta and up that way. So that's your weekly weather report.
So as we talked
traffic
last,
report as well, I guess.
As we talked last time, right? Like we should just totally rename the podcast.
Yeah.
Weather, sports,
weather,
and
bets,
pets.
And something.
Yeah. Speaking of sports, how'd you do? Were you predicted that on the end of our last podcast that Tom Brady was not going to go to the Super Bowl? Did you win?
I didn't do so good on that.
Like I said, you can't mess with Tom Brady, man.
You cannot quote unquote bet against Tom Brady.
I don't even know the man or anything about him, but
well,
I don't know him either, but he's a pretty stellar athlete. And
So I think I predicted Kansas City would win, which they did, but I kind of had my scores backwards and the point spreads wrong. But so Tampa Bay versus Kansas City Chiefs, I did. Kind of root for the Chiefs early on in the year. They were my prediction. I thought Pittsburgh was going to be there early on, and they did not make it to the final dance. And I really thought Green Bay was going to beat Tampa Bay last week. So, Super Bowl next week, we will probably do our podcast recording before the big game. So maybe we can make our predictions then versus today.
Okay.
Word of the week. So, do you have any kind of service, or not service, but do you get any emails with like a phrase of the day or a word of the week or any of those trivial things.
Like related to veterinary stuff or just
just like period. Like
I for used to. Quite frankly, I don't know that I get them anymore. But honestly, in some of my email accounts, so I was actually thinking about this the other day. How many email accounts do you think the average person has?
The average person, one. But what? It's not unusual to have a work and a personal or even a third. I actually have three.
That you use or that like you like at least look at?
My original one, I still get like emails coming through, but I don't use it at all. And I don't even know how many emails I get coming through on that. But I had a personal, and then we did, you know, develop our business, I guess, Gmail accounts, which are, what, at mygavet?
Which is essentially a Gmail account.
It's a Gmail, but yeah, it's at mygavet. So that's Angel at mygavet or Dr. Miller at mygavet.
Absolutely.com. Hit me up anytime. There's no not mygavet.com. That's our website. That's not our email address.
What is it?
Our email address is not at mygavet.com.
Okay, you just keep talking. Okay. Just keep
so
talking.
So the reason I was thinking about that is I have probably four email addresses like on my phone that are essentially saved, if you will. But I have an email from AOL way back when I got my first internet account.
Okay.
And I still have emails coming to it. So to answer your question, yes, I do have stuff like that, but I get like, you know, 800 emails a day in that account, and right. I certainly do not read them. So I just hit like deselect or select all delete. But anyways,
okay.
So I do get some things like that, but I also get some like veterinary questions of the day. So yeah. For like those technicians that are trying to prepare for their boards or something like that, usually, I still get those, and it's kind of fun, you know, just to make sure that you can answer the questions still.
Sure. Okay. So, Reed, I just pulled up like an email, and it was addressed to me, Brad Miller, and I clicked on that, you know, to see what email address it went to. And so you have the screen in front of you now with my personal non-work email address. And what is my work email address? Is it Dr. Miller at mygavet.com? And did you just say, like, it's but, not my GA vet?
Because you have it saved. Okay, so.
It is. It, Angel, okay, so Angel, wait. Angel.
Okay, no, Dr. Miller.
Okay.
Okay,
you're
listen.
Very confused right
now.
No,
wait. This is not an email that you pulled up. This is your contact for yourself.
Which is how you would email me.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
I'm going to
Dr. Miller
I'm email
at
it right
mygavet.com. It's not Dr. Miller at Gmail. We have a Gmail account that ends in mygavet.com, russellridge@mygavet.com.
You're killing me right now. You're killing me. You're okay. Serious.
I'm dead serious.
So your other one is like your doctor whatever at yahoo.com?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Please, people, please email Dr. Miller and let him know that you do not have your email address.
So what is my email
at
address?
At gmail.com.
It's not at gmail.com. It's at mygavet.com. No, it's
not. Oh, you're literally killing gosh. Me. It's at... Okay, okay.
Okay, folks, sorry. We had to pause because Angel's making me think I'm crazy. And I know I'm not.
You almost believe me though, right?
No. No, I mean, okay, I had to, like, show you four or five other email
addresses.
But I really
have myself believing it. Like, it doesn't, it looks so weird right now to see, like,
oh my God, you look weird
you're
right
at
now.
mygavet.com.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
I don't even know. Okay. So all this came from the word of the week, and you asked me if I get emails with, like, these daily words and stuff. And yeah. I told you I do.
Okay.
We went back to, like, how many emails does a normal person have? You said the average person has one.
Yes, I would think
email.
That's the average, but it's not unusual to have two .com or .net email addresses.
Okay. So what was the point? What's the word of the week?
So the word of the week came through this morning on my phone, and the word of the week is nictate, N-I-C-T-A-T-E.
So someone sent you this word through some platform?
Yeah, some platform. And so I knew what that meant, but it really kind of jogged my memory, and it does relate to veterinary medicine. And so nictate, as you see before you on our notes, is Latin, and it means blink. correct?
Yes.
According to our notes here.
Well, it's also correct.
So I'm like, you know what? I never have really used that in a sentence. And so I went on to read and it said, an example of using it in a sentence is you must resist the urge to nictate to win a staring contest. Or maybe the doctor is going to drop some eye drops into your eye and he or she says, okay, Angel, please don't nictate while I'm doing this.
Would that weird you out?
And you would like look at them like, what are you talking about, mm-hmm. nictate? So I've never heard it used that way. But in veterinary medicine, what sparked my memory was the two word phrase nictitating membrane. Do you know what that is?
I do, but I guess I've always referred to it as a nictitan and not a nictitating membrane.
Nictitans. So when I was writing these notes, I'm like, nictitating membrane. I had to double check myself. I'm like, gosh, have I been wrong since vet school? Is it nictitating membrane? No, I went online and according to Google, it is nictitating membrane. And so what is the nictitating membrane commonly called in an animal?
A third eyelid.
Third eyelid. And so we typically only see the third eyelid or nictitating membrane when the animal does what?
Blinks.
Is blinking, right? They start to blink. It comes up from ventromedially, so towards mm-hmm. the nose on the from the lower eyelid aspect, and it comes up and starts covering the globe of the eye. I think it's some kind of weird protective mechanism because people... At least I've never met anybody that has one.
Humans do not. But not just your domestic dogs and cats, other animals, right? So like amphibians or these guys have them as well.
I'm thinking like lizards, a chameleon does. Yeah. So I'm sure they taught me this in vet school that nictate was related to the root word to blink, mm-hmm. but I totally didn't remember that. If you would have asked me before I saw this email come through today, you know, what does it mean? I would have said nictitating, you know, it relates to the eye somehow, but I wouldn't have known how or why.
Interesting.
So you do, or at least you should, learn something new every day.
So, but am I wrong? Because actually when we started talking about this, I actually looked up the word nictitan and I really can't find it anywhere. So it was like nictitan. I feel like that's what I learned that third eyelid as like the word is a nictitan. But you're saying, is it like not used anymore?
They may say the gland, maybe the tarsal gland, maybe that's the nictitans gland, maybe what you're thinking, but I'm not sure. Or maybe that's just what you learned in the D.
Maybe.
So what is the most common
prolapse
abnormality that we see associated with the nictitating membrane?
Prolapse.
Prolapse of what?
The nictitan.
The nictitans. So the tarsal gland, right? And so what is the common phrasing that is used to describe that?
Cherry eye.
Cherry eye. So...
Did I pass?
You passed, yeah. So a cherry eye is not that there's a cherry in the eye, but it's a prolapse, an outward pouching of the nictitating membrane gland, which is actually a tarsal gland or a tear-producing gland that evidently can be known as the nictitans. And what should you do to repair that? And what should you not do?
Are you asking me as a... veterinarian? Because I'm not.
Okay. So when presented teasing. With a dog with cherry eye, way back when...
people would remove them.
People would simply snip them out to make them appear more cosmetically normal. And then years down the road, we realized they would develop keratoconjunctivitis seca.
You're looking at me like you don't know.
Well,
yes.
I'm trying to like work through this. KCS or dry eye. And it was found out or realized that about 85% of the normal of the tear production in a normal eye comes from that gland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now we do a pexy or a tacking technique to preserve the gland but not have it prolapsed out, affecting the dog's vision.
So I have a question. We have talked about entropion, which is another eye disease or deformity or
deformity. Yeah.
Where essentially the eyelids roll in, and historically the way to remove them is to essentially to remove a wedge and then sew them back together. But I've read recently that they actually have like kind of a Botox, it's not really Botox, but like an injection that you can inject in to actually roll the eyelid back out. Have you heard of that?
I've not. I know that there are some reported laser surgery techniques to where you go in and scarify to make those areas contract. You actually do little X's. So this is probably going to be along the same lines. Something just to kind of irritate. Do you remember what it's called? Or?
I don't. I can find it. We can talk about it off air or whatever. But I just thought that was super interesting. It makes sense, right? So like, why wouldn't you fill the void or fill the space and then essentially have the eyelid roll back out to normal position?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
It may or may not work in every play, in every case, but I thought it was pretty cool.
I've not seen that. Real quickly, healthy pet, happy life segment. I guess I just wanted to briefly touch on heartworms in the Southeast.
Okay.
So I think most of us would agree in the Southeast, I was going to say the most important, but there are so many very important things that we do for our pets. But if we're talking about preventative medicine, then super important for us to annually test for heartworm disease or heartworm or heartworms, whatever your flavor of the day is. Yes. And then also to make sure that our pets are being properly protected either with a monthly preventative product or a 6 or 12 month injectable product that's available. Would you agree?
Yeah. Like, year round. I don't know if we mentioned that.
Yeah. So like as a veterinarian, I feel like I did not do my job if I do not convince my clients to get their pet tested for heartworm and also to get them on the proper preventions.
Sure.
The other thing that we have been doing for, gosh, probably 15 years, when we test for heartworm, we are testing for some tick-borne diseases because they're quite prevalent in our area as well. And typically we're testing for Ehrlichia, E. canis, and Anaplasma, and what else?
Lyme
disease. Okay, so those are three prominent species of tick-borne diseases in our area. And then the most common clinically relevant tick-borne disease we see is Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So we are screening for tick-borne diseases, but more importantly, we're trying to prevent them by placing our pets on monthly flea and tick products. And so I think we shared maybe 4, 5, 6 episodes ago that several of your dogs have tested positive for some of these diseases and actually became clinically ill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, I think we'll kind of leave it at that, but definitely if you have fleas or ticks and or mosquitoes in your area.
Which you do if you live in the Southeast.
You do, and you really do nationwide. Maybe not Alaska.
So I think that's interesting. So kind of rolling this in and why we talk about it here in the practice or in most veterinary practices, right? The whole Ben Franklin quote, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah.
And that's definitely where it comes into here and why we feel so strongly about letting people know, like, you can do this one little chew once a month and you can eliminate the possibility of having these deadly diseases, sure, you know, going forward.
You're preventing the disease and you're keeping your pet healthy. Should your pet contract heartworm in particular, it is oftentimes treatable without irreparable damage to the pet.
If caught
early enough, which is why we do annual testing.
Right.
You know, looking at the finances of it, it costs probably 15 to 20 times the amount it would to prevent versus it does to treat. Maybe I didn't phrase that correctly. You could spend a couple thousand dollars treating your pet for heartworm disease over several months, whereas you're probably going to spend anywhere between $100 to $150 a year to prevent it.
Right.
With your prevention. So definitely something that's very serious. And yes, we have mosquitoes pretty much every month of the year here, whether you know it or not.
Right, for sure.
Okay. So let's jump into a couple of news stories.
Let's do it.
Did you? So I pulled a couple. The super interesting one to me that I think maybe I came on this last week. Maybe I read it this week. But did you know that veterinarians in some areas are authorized to administer the COVID vaccine?
I didn't know that before this article, but I found it interesting, and I thought that I might be totally speaking out of turn, but I feel like in other critical situations, veterinarians would be called upon to help.
Help with public health public situations. Health.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head that has happened at any point in time other than like, you know, like tornadoes and that kind of thing. Like they're down there, but they're not usually treating
natural disaster type of situation. Yeah,
but they're usually not treating human beings. But I can only imagine that veterinarians would be called upon. In my opinion, I do feel like in a lot of instances that veterinarians would be more qualified over like your...
So right currently pharmacists are the primary inoculators who are administering these vaccines.
Yes.
I don't know if they're taught how to give injections in pharmacy school. Maybe they are.
I have no idea. I mean, maybe they must have some training. Yeah.
And I know that there are tons of pharmacies, you know, sprinkled around as independent pharmacies, you know, whether it's a CVS, a Walgreens, or a mom and pop shop, if you will, and then also in most, if not every grocery store and major, not every box store, but I guess actually Sam's Club, Costco, Target, Walmart.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Most of those retail box stores as well. So I understand that there are a lot of these locations, but my current understanding is there are no clinics or hospitals administering the vaccine.
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So it's more coming through the Department of Public Health, the vaccine itself, and then it's being distributed to these pharmacists to administer. So, yeah, I mean, back in December, the article reads Connecticut authorized, kind of came up with an emergency executive order authorizing veterinarians and podiatrists, dentists, and dental hygienists to administer the vaccine. Colorado followed suit on January the 7th. And then about a week after that, Novato, their governor, issued a directive for veterinarians that they could do that as well. So,
and Ohio, I think, is slated to be the next.
Yeah. So we need to contact Dr. Ensign out there and see if he's administering any of those vaccines.
So I find it interesting, I guess. So I think a lot of veterinarians would kind of ask themselves, like, we're not seeing the public, right? Like, we across the country are still curbside. So why would they administer the vaccine to humans? There is like a punny t-shirt that's kind of going around that's been manufactured. I've seen it at pretty much every event that I've been at, every veterinary event, where it says veterinary medicine, ... because people are gross.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
And so I think it's meant to be a pun, but yet there's a lot of reason in why people choose veterinary medicine over human medicine in some aspects of that.
So my mind did go there, like you were saying, we're qualified to do that, but really I don't want to give another person an injection.
Exactly. So a lot of people would be like, why would I do this?
Yeah.
As a veterinarian, maybe it's selfish,
yeah,
but I do think that there would be a lot of questions like, what's in it for me?
Well, that's why funny. you should mention that.
The
what's in it for veterinarians in some states, not the case in Georgia, because we are classified as healthcare workers. But in some states, if a veterinarian is going to administer that vaccine, then they immediately get classified as that healthcare worker and they are eligible for an early vaccine.
So that was where I was going and where I think that a lot of the article went. In some states, you can give the vaccine to get the vaccine, whereas you wouldn't be eligible before that. But and currently in the state of Georgia, I actually heard from one of our veterinarians who spoke with a pharmacist that veterinary team members, not just those licensed by the state or veterinarians, but everyone in the practice is actually eligible in the same group to get the vaccine.
And that's kind of cool because we're serving the public and their pets.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fairly generous...
Generous. No, I would agree for sure.
All right, moving on. Next article.
What do you got?
Well, Southwest Airlines made the decision to no longer allow emotional support animals on their flights.
They jumped on the bandwagon here, huh?
Yep. After the DOT, I think, kind of revised their regulations on the transport of service animals. I think this is a good thing?
I think it's a great thing, quite frankly, because there's a quote in here that says the DOT was prompted after it had a notice an increase in travelers fraudulently representing their pets as service animals. And I think it's a disservice to allow an emotional support animal on a plane or in a public space that hasn't gone through an actual program. Whereas like an actual service dog has typically graduated a program.
Yeah. So I think the new rules and regulations are that these service animals have to have a transportation form that's issued by the DOT. I don't think in our practice we have filled any of those out, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah, but I have not been personally involved in any of it, but I do believe that Dr. Hines may have been.
But, you know, the intent here is not to truly prevent those needed service animals for whether it's a special needs child or a blind adult or child. Mm-hmm. That's not the intent of the rule, but it is intended to prevent those people who are abusing the quote-unquote support animal and claiming for emotional support, mm-hmm. which oftentimes means they really love their dog and want to take it everywhere, or their peacock, or their miniature horse,
Yes, of course. And the thing here is not that, and I read a little bit further into this, but we talked about this a couple weeks back when Delta, United Airlines, American Airlines, all of these guys were being kind of thrashed about in the public for not allowing emotional support. It's not that they're not allowing it. They're not allowing it for free. It's not a service animal. So like if you have a true service animal that human being is dependent upon for a specific task, then those pets travel free. Emotional support animals were traveling free. And now you can bring them on still, but they're a pet. And so you have to pay the fee.
It's probably going to be airline dependent the way I'm reading this, though, because Southwest says no longer allows. So I would encourage you, if you're listening and you want to take your emotional support animal with you, to contact the airline directly, which we have always done.
But I feel like the emotional support thing became like a buzzworthy word. And what I'm saying is I think these guys are going to say we don't allow emotional support animals because it's not a recognized serviced animal, but you can bring your pet. Like if you want to bring your chihuahua on the plane, you now have to pay the pet fee. Whereas before they were free. I don't know that they'll ever allow a miniature horse or a peacock to be, you know, traveling on the plane.
And I'm not trying to argue with you, but this article clearly states, according to Southwest Airlines, emotional support animals will be banned from their flights from March 1st, 2021.
Southwest said the passengers may still travel with some animals for a charge, which has been a standard part of their existing pets program, but those animals must meet all requirements regarding in-cabin stowage and are restricted to cats and dogs only.
Southwest or Delta? That
this is Southwest. Southwest. Yes. Okay. So again, I'm not trying to argue with you, but as you read further into it, it's the emotional support that they're not allowing.
Right.
And because people are tying that emotional support to a quote unquote service, which is free, you can still bring your cat or your dog on the plane, but it needs to go back to this whole like traveling pet, not a traveling companion, emotional support animal. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I see what you just read, that dogs and cats only. You know, it used to be that all pets went in with cargo, and then I think the liability became so huge.
Yeah, gosh.
That now I'm sure you can.
Yeah, they do. They definitely still travel with cargo, but it has to meet certain regulations. Like if you're traveling out to Arizona in the middle of the summer and you want to put a dog in cargo, Delta, I know specifically, will say like the conditions aren't permissible, so you can't you can't take your dog. But anyways, I think it's interesting. I think this is good. I think veterinarians kind of got hung up in this whole emotional support thing. Like, I know we were asked more than once, can you just sign this paper and tell
my 120-pound Rottweiler, mm-hmm. who tries to eat you when you walk in the exam room, mm-hmm. is good to go on an airplane.
Yeah.
And yeah, put us in a kind of a predicament.
It put us in a definitely a weird place.
And then the airlines wanted us to guarantee that the pets were healthy and would be okay on the plane. And we
but there was nothing ever about temperament, which is the whole point of a service animal, right? So service animals go through temperament testing, and they're obviously, you know, expected to uphold the standard of that temperament.
Yeah. So I think this is good. Pets are super important to most of us, but sometimes processes, systems, etc. are abused, and this is a good kind of a checks and balance situation, I think.
Yeah, for sure. One last little story I have, and then we can kind of wrap up for the day, because I know it's we're already hitting that 30-minute mark here. How tall are you when you stand upright, Dr. Miller?
About 6'3".
6'3". Could you imagine a dog being 7 feet, 5.5 inches tall?
Like when it stood up like that?
Yeah. That's a really big dog.
It's a big dog. Some of these Great Danes. Is it a Great Dane?
Yes. So basically, he was the world's tallest dog. He was given his title in 2016. His name is Freddie. He is from Essex, UK, and he recently passed. Huh. But yeah, standing, he was 3'4". What is called foot to withers. What is a withers?
The top of the shoulders, like on a horse. Mm. So the... You know, right between the shoulder blades, the spine there.
So, like, his head, obviously, if they went from floor to head, it would be taller than that. But so from foot to withers, he was 3'4". And then when he stood on his hind legs, he was 7'5.5" tall.
Like, that's pretty tall.
That's huge. It doesn't say what he weighed. I would be interested to know. A
couple hundred pounds, probably.
Yeah. But poor Freddie, he's passed. But I think that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those giant breeds are... quite gigantic. We had a Great Dane named Cowboy, and he was a big guy. And then our biggest dog we ever had as far as weight was about 240 English Mastiff.
How tall were they?
Well, I never stood them up on their hind legs.
I'm not saying like that, but like, you know, you're 6'3". Did they come up to your ankle?
You know? To my hip. Yeah. To your hip. I mean, yeah, okay. My ankle. Wow.
That's a Chihuahua, I'm asking.
Yeah, so, I mean, 3 foot, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, 3'6" or so, probably 3'3" to 3'6".
Yeah, pretty big.
At
their
withers.
At their withers.
Yeah.
So that's two words of the week.
Two words of the week, withers. So, all right, sign us out.
Check in next week as we discuss more in our news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And you can always email drmiller@mygavet.com.
You might want to add the .com if you're going to give it to me, actually.
Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.